Second speaker in our panel, before we break for morning tea, is Gary Thomas, Executive Director, Equity and Student Support Services at La Trobe University, and former chair of the National Indigenous Higher Education Network, NIHED, and many other things as well.
Thank you, Chris. And I'd also like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as traditional owners of the country upon which we're meeting today. And thank you, Art, for your welcome to country, and also acknowledge the other Aboriginal people in the room today, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people in the room today. And I want to make a particular acknowledgement of two colleagues of mine from La Trobe, Julie Andrews and Richard Broome, who will be speaking later today. But first of all, and this builds on from Sue's talk with us, we need to acknowledge our success. So very quickly, I'd like you to applaud yourselves and your colleagues, because without you, this year, so many thousands of students wouldn't have been exposed to Indigenous perspectives, Indigenous studies, our stories, our cultures, our histories. So could you please clap yourselves? I wanted to talk today about Indigenous Studies programs. And just to give you a brief background, I'm an old teacher by trade. So when I start speaking, for those old teachers in the room, you're probably thinking, yes, yes, tick that off, tick that off, tick that off. I'm not going to say anything that I think is new, but stuff that we, I think, need to be reminded about. And I'm so pleased to hear Martin speak today about professionalism that's, coming into these programs, and that it's not just, we're still not just the fringe dwellers in the outskirts of the academy, we're actually changing the agenda and the things of how we teach and how we get students, essentially non-Indigenous students and Indigenous students across graduation stages, we can provide lessons to the rest of our institutions. My background, as I say, I'm an old teacher by trade. I taught English and music in Far North Queensland high schools before coming into the higher ed sector. I taught in a compulsory unit, Indigenous Studies units, to teachers, pre-service teachers at the University of Southern Queensland. And for those of you who teach in compulsory units, you know that has particular challenges. Then I came to the University of Melbourne, spent 6 years in student services, went to La Trobe University, where I am now, and taught in humanities, in political science. And it's something that happens to you as an Aboriginal person in the sector. Because you're a warm body and you speak the language, you must know about this stuff. So as a musician by trade, teaching political science was quite interesting. But as an old teacher by trade, I thought, crap, I need to learn about this stuff. So, the kind of research and undertaking, because, I had to build the subject. The subject wasn't there. The unit wasn't there. So not only did I have to learn what political scientists were interested in, I had to build the thing. And I wanted to raise seven elements of Indigenous Studies programs, and essentially reminding us of these elements. And for some programs, I suppose that they may be new things, but I'm sure they're not. The first of all, at the centre of it, is country and culture. Where are we teaching these studies? Where have we included culture? I was very interested in Arnie's description of the Dalai Lama and being a down-to-earth person. Our programs have to be up from country. They're built from country up. And we have to retain that. We have to know where we are and how we're doing this stuff and how we're operating, teaching Indigenous studies, and for many of us, on countries that we're not from. And paying respects and being mindful of that. The second element I want to talk about is students, and remembering that constantly we have to understand the context of our students. And I'm so glad Sue raised that earlier in her talk about Indigenous students, because I often believe what we do for Indigenous students is actually good practice.
Absolutely.
You know, it's good practice for a whole lot of different students, whether they come from disadvantaged backgrounds or not, knowing who they are and what's brought them to this unit of study. What are their aspirations to get out of this unit of study? Are we constantly just regurgitating the same thing for those 13 weeks, marking our assignments, then marking our assignments, then marking our assignments, and, you know, sending in results? But, you know, every different cohort has kind of different needs on how they've come to the unit. I was struck once whilst teaching at La Trobe because I had a student come to the unit, come into the unit of study, and the reason they gave for being there was that I just want to know what the problem is with Aboriginal people. I thought that was a very good, you know, use of your hex, but... So, over that time, we had to work with, and you all have worked with these attitudes, and, you know, it can burn Aboriginal people out, and, you know, non-Indigenous people, all of a sudden they're race traitors, and why are you speaking about this stuff? And, you know, quite determined feedback that you get from students. But it's identifying those aspirations in our cohorts and trying to match, we need to be flexible enough to match those aspirations and meet them. The third element I want to talk about is content. Content, and I'm going to speak about it in terms of the professions. And the way we're presenting content, and Sue raised this as well in terms of Indigenous students, but the contextualisation of it. You know, how are we meeting these aspirations if we're not actually engaging them about what they want to know? If we just present it as a surface level and they never actually engage with it, as, you know, on a personal level, it, you know, they may as well be, you know, I don't know, doing physics, sorry, all the physicists in the room. But they have to be engaged with it. And often what we find is, I think that we need to have some idea around where this map of Indigenous studies is happening in our institutions. What are they getting at first year? What are they getting at second year? What are they getting at third year? And this is the old teacher in me about work programs and, you know, connecting with other colleagues in the Indigenous Studies program. And, you know, often we will use the same content, but the lesson is different. You know, and in traditional societies and learning, that's how it is. You know, as you grow older, you get a different aspect of a lesson. But our students don't know any of this. So I think we have to be more explicit to our students. You know, we need to tell them why we're doing stuff. You know, we can't just approach our students as passive receivers of this stuff. And, you know, and because we're the expert in the room, we just deliver it and then walk out and hope they don't, you know, turn up after the lecture wanting some consultation. The other thing, in terms of content, we can't be afraid of getting into some of the painful issues. And we all recognise this in the room. It's not all about, you know, dots, didgeridoos and dancing. And we have to have those conversations with our colleagues and our institutions about, you can't just take one aspect of this stuff. You take it all and you get involved. And I was talking to a colleague I just met this morning from the University of Melbourne, and we were talking about being in there for the long haul. The fourth thing that I wanted to raise is staffing. And it's about, comes back to, I suppose, Martin raised it in terms of professionalism of what we do and how we as educators are going into lectures and tutorials and managing courses across the country, of how we're actually leading the profession. You know, and we have the capacity to give examples and be the models across our institutions. And we shouldn't be shy away from that. You know, it's very easy to kind of isolate yourselves, be isolated from every other thing because Indigenous people are isolated. We've got to kind of break out down that and kind of get on committees within faculties and get on committees in the central university and start talking about this stuff constantly. And don't be frightened when you're walking around where people kind of start running away from you because they see, oh, no, here's the Indigenous Studies person coming again. You know, oh, they're going to ask me about content in my classroom. Well, yes, we are, okay? Either have an answer for it or, you know, get away. The other thing that we need to take care of is recognition. And this is particularly related to, as you know, academics in the area of Indigenous Studies, you know, where is your research going, and also the recognition at an institutional level of the impact of some of the research that we undertake. You know, some of the projects that we undertake for community, you know, in terms of an ERA exercise, nothing, doesn't even get into the room. But in terms of that community, huge, huge impacts. So we have to have those conversations. And remember to keep having those conversations. The fifth thing is the unit structure. And, you know, Sue essentially stole all my thunder, really, because she spoke about networks and connectedness for Indigenous students. That is even more important when you've got non-Indigenous students in your classroom who've never had any kind of, you know, apart from, you know, maybe two people, and one of them is the head of centre, head of the Aboriginal Centre. They're the only Aboriginal people they know. So this building a sense of connectedness within the teaching practice. You've got to get students together, student to lecturer, student to tutor, whatever it is, but they have to feel connected to this stuff or they'll never be connected to the issues. You know, it's, as I say, some of this stuff is painful, and unless we kind of touch them at the emotional level, we can, and if, I suppose saying this to an audience of academics is, you know, I suppose the challenge is we can't just leave it at the intellectual level, or it's very easily left in the assignment, in the graduation, they can quickly walk away from it. Actually, you know, without breaking them down, they actually have to feel something. They've got to feel something. You know, the Greeks call it metanoia, moving from the head into the heart. Well, I'd like to actually extend that so it actually moves from the head into the heart into the hand. So actually go out and change the world, because that's what our students will do if we're doing it correctly, or doing it in the right spirit and we're giving it the best go that we can. So, connectedness. The sixth element is the teaching and learning environment. And this is what I was talking about in terms of cultural awareness moving to Indigenous Studies and back again. I think it's not cultural awareness for me. It's about creating learning environments within our programs that promote self-awareness. That the student is actually having to think about themselves. And we as, you know, academics, lecturers, tutors, or whatever we are, need to think about ourselves in these spaces as well. Yes, and so it's, and it goes, ties in the contextualization of the content that we're providing, but it also means that people aren't just leaving it there, just remains there, and we can walk away from it. And it's related to that, how do I define myself in this area? I said, the unit that I was teaching, I no longer teach, so I'm kind of just blabbing out all this stuff today because I no longer have to do it. I taught this unit called Reconciliation, and it was taught to political science students, and I approached it from a position of every issue that we covered, a student had to position themselves within it. They couldn't be an innocent bystander. So you can't kind of profit from the dispossession and marginalisation of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people in this country and take the degree from an Australian institution that's essentially occupying Aboriginal land without placing yourself in this position. So we kind of don't let students get away. I could have purposely wanted students not to be able to get away from it. And my last point, in terms of this rant that I'm talking about, is assessment. And this is very much the old teacher in me. We can't assess something we haven't taught. Okay? We have this expectation that students will come in and, you know, be able to write this stuff. They'll just be able to, you know, produce a 5,000 word essay or report or whatever form we've set. But we kind of think, well, off you go, do it. But not one part of the teaching experience have we actually taught them how to do it or even provided any modelling of, you know, what might it look like. So, and then we get bitterly disappointed when, you know, their performance in our assessment pieces kind of don't match what we thought. And, you know, I think sometimes, and I've done this, I've said to myself, oh, did you happen to say that out loud or were you just thinking it? You know. And I think we also need to include, and this goes back to positioning the student within these issues, we need to include assessment that's flexible enough but actually encourages them to, you know, use those high-order level kind of synthesis and evaluation of their position, those kinds of skills. And it stretches them intellectually and also stretches them emotionally because, as I say, if we're doing our jobs to the best of our ability, taking into account some of these elements, and there are many more, and as I say, you know, these are not new things to you in the room, but if we're doing our jobs to the best of our abilities, trying to get some of this stuff, you know, I won't say right, but at least moving towards, you know, what is good teaching, well, our students are able to go out, walk across graduation stages, go into the community, having been better for being in our classrooms. So, thanks.